When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back to another episode of Under the Cosh. Mr. Jonathan Parkin here with me, as always. How are we doing? You
very
all right?
Well, very well.
It's No brownie.
Empty otherwise seat. Engaged.
Little baby's come along.
Yeah, his missus has just dropped, so we're short of... Actually, we're not really going to fucking miss him, are we? We'll probably get as much input for not being here, we haven't. Let's be right about it.
That's a shame he's not here.
I know, he was looking forward to this one as well.
He was, and only the second goalkeeper to appear on the podcast so far. Should feel honoured.
I do.
I can tell.
Man City, Sheffield Wednesday, Charlton, bit of time in Scotland, probably best known for being the hero of the penalty shootout in that 2000 playoff final for Man City v Gillingham. Nicky Weaver.
How are you doing, lads? You all right?
Yeah, good. Thanks for coming.
No problem.
I feel like last two we've gone proper 90s, early 2000s nostalgic. It's like my generation of watching football.
Yeah, it's a bit old for me, like.
Yeah?
A bit old for me.
I've been doing my notes in a massive pencil from Tenerife.
rubber at him.
Yeah. With a laser pen.
It's good that you've done some notes, to be fair.
Time at Man City, how are your career?
Yeah, so, you know, best time of my life. I went there when I was 18. I did my scholarship at, where's apprenticeship it were then, YTS. $39.50 a week and all that. You'll remember that, Parker, won't you?
No, so I'm on fucking now.
You had a pay rise then, have you?
I remember them days. I'm fucking in them days now.
Yeah. So yeah, I did my 2-year apprenticeship there and then from nowhere, really, City come and plucked me, which were...
Because you only played one game, haven't you?
Yeah, we're fucking good in there.
It must have been.
No, just played one game. I'd actually left Sheff Wednesday as a schoolboy, as a 15-year-old, to go to Mansfield. And then...
Sheff Wednesday fan?
Yeah, so I grew up, yeah. So I left there at 15, then they tried to buy me back at 17.
Was that your choice to...
To leave, yeah. But I would have got released because I was going nowhere. I'd had knee problems. I'd had that Osgood Slatters. Remember that when you're like growing pains when you're like 14, 15?
I've seen a porno with him in, I think.
So Osgood Slatter?
Yeah. I don't think I've seen that one.
I've seen a couple, but I don't think I've seen that one.
I'll just send it to you.
But yeah, so I got a move out of City, out of Mansfield, the city, from nowhere, really. So yeah, so I went to Man City and it was like, wow, I couldn't believe it. I'd been in the dressing room at Mansfield. They were like 15, 16 pros, all just right, no big hitters really.
Yeah.
And then you go to Man City, you walk in and it's like, you know, Uwe Rosler and Georgie Kingclad's in, you're like, fucking hell.
Because we were a bit of a mess when you got there, weren't it?
A lot of a mess. There were people like Jerry Creaney, Neil Heaney, Scott Hiley, all from, they'd had loads of managers in like 2 years before I come, so it stacks up, doesn't it? And there were some like 53 pros there when I got there. And then Big Joe, he had the task of sort of trying to sort it all out, so you know what it's like. But it was the best thing that could have happened to me, and they got relegated, which was a blessing in disguise for me because it meant, you know,
give me a chance,
get the sort of the deadwood, if you like, out, the big earners, the ones that have been there on big contracts for a few years, and sort of start from afresh, from sort of like a bit like Sunderland are now, if you like, you know, you've got to try and clear the decks, aren't you, and go from there.
Would Joe Royal good for you then?
Brilliant. He's my favourite manager ever played under.
Yeah,
it were he come in sort of like February and the two lads who were playing were Tommy Wright, who's manager of St Johnstone now, and Martin Morgetson. He got released at the end of the season, Martin, and it were me and Tommy. So I assumed coming back for pre-season, Tommy would get the nod and I'd be number two, which I'd have been happy
You'd
with,
happy
you know.
With that. Yeah.
And anyway, put me straight in and sort of never looked back. And, you know, that first season were just brilliant. And it obviously ended sort of with a Wembley thing. But that season, for Joe to put me in and, you know, I think I played 55 games that year as my first season, and I don't think I ever played that many again in one season.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing with keepers, it's hard to get experience. It is. There's only one spot, isn't there?
Yeah, and if other lads are doing well and don't get injured, then you've got to wait for your chance. So I'll always be grateful to Big Joe for putting me in, and he looked after me. He had just a good way about doing things. If he'd had not a great game, he wouldn't really sell it in front of lads. He'd just maybe pull you in weak and, you know, put you out and say, don't worry about that, you've been brilliant this year or whatever. And if you'd had a good game, he might not give you too much praise, and he'd just walk past you in the corridor in training ground and just sort of give you a little wink and well done Saturday, son. And things like that just meant a lot, you know. And I certainly played my best ever football under Joe, I think.
Yeah.
But the old school?
Pretty much, yeah. There weren't much fanning about at the back and all that. It was just, you know,
just get it forward.
Get it over there, get it wide and get it in. But, you know, we had two back-to-back promotions, which sort of is very, very rare. My first four seasons playing went up, up, down, up. So that's how it were for me. So first 2 years went up, up. I'm thinking,
fucking
hell,
easy,
this is all right, isn't it? And I remember after the second promotion, Ian Bishop, do you remember Ian Bishop?
Yeah.
Midfield, a great player, Bish, great lad as well. And he sat me down and he's saying, you know, enjoy these times. You don't come around, very often and all that. Make sure you enjoy it. I'm thinking, fuck off. What's he know like? You know, fucking dinosaur. This is how it is. And then we went up to Premier League, and we soon come down to a bam. We got relegated, and but it was just fantastic because I think the City fans now, when they look back, it certainly weren't boring. And I think they still got a few songs they sing about where they were then. Yeah, the Invisible Man and all that.
And what were you in that playoff final?
I'll be 20. So when I started season 19 and play a final with 20. Yeah.
Were you red on it for that penalty shootout?
What do you mean? Wait a minute. What's a fucking question? Were you red? It's 20 and all. Well, playing at Wembley in a playoff final. Were you red on it? Well, no, he didn't give a fuck.
No, but were you shitting yourself with it? Or penalty shootout, 20-year-old, final, it's on your shoulders as a keeper, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's no pressure for keepers, is there? If they don't save it, you don't give them a fucking, do you?
There were pressure on us going to Wembley. Because we're only playing Gillingham, that's probably where they are in it, League 2, League 1, whatever. Obviously, we're City. We had to get out at first attempt, so going into it, there was a lot of pressure, a lot of expectation. We took sort of 40,000 down from Manchester, and we sort of knew we had to win, because you know what it's like, if you don't get out at the first attempt, it gets harder. Leeds have done it.
A club like City as well.
Yeah, and we were like everybody's scalp, so it's, you know, City coming to town and everyone wants to sort of raise the game, bit of a cup final, bumper crowd for everybody. Obviously, when we got there, we're
2-0 down with 10 minutes to go.
2-0 down. Carlos Alba scored for them on about 82. So you're thinking, fucking hell, here we go. And then Bob Taylor, he scored on like 87. So you're absolutely gone. And then Kev Orlock scored in like 90th minute. And it was a decent finish, to be fair. But the City ended at half empty because they'd all gone. And so when Kev scored, there weren't really any celebrations from anyone. It was just our consolation and that sort of it. And then biggest thing were, after Kev's goal, Mark Olsey, who was referee, he signalled over to the fourth official, there were 5 minutes of injury time. They'd never been 5 minutes. They were probably about two or three. I've still got image of him. He had a Tony Pulis, he was Gillingham manager. He's going fucking mental.
I can imagine.
He's going ballistic on touchline. This footage of it, he's going
fuck
mad
off
at fourth official and all this. Where's 5 minutes come from and all this? Anyway, and you know, Paul Dickoff, who had missed a few chances that day, it sort of fell to him. And Vince Bartram, who were in their goal, was his best man at his wedding. So, and Vince had made some good saves off Dickie. And he probably thought it weren't going to be his day, and one sort of fell to him, and he's slotted it in top corner, and sort of everyone went wild. All City fans then started running back in, and so that's 2-2, and you're like, fucking hell. So extra time sort of come and went, and I can't really remember much about it, and it's, like I say, just come and went, and then we're into penalties, so as a keeper, you're thinking, well, I fancy this, and big thing going into penalties were toss of the coin, which end it's going to be. It's going to be at the City end. So no disrespect to the Gillingham players, they weren't sort of big game players.
Yeah.
I must have suddenly looked a bit bigger, and goal must have looked a bit smaller. I managed to save one, first one, which sort of puts them right on the back foot. And people actually forget, Paul Dickoff missed his penalty.
Yeah, it both post, didn't it?
It both post and come out. So and I spoke to Kevin Orlock recently, who scored he scored his penalty. And scored, and nobody really mentions Kev. Yeah. Where Dickie missed his penalty, but scored the equaliser, and you know Dickie's sort of famous for that. Yeah. So I don't think Kev's too happy about it. But it come round to to sort of Guy Butters coming up for them, left-sided centre-half. And I said to the linesman, if I save this, is that it? He went, yep.
Were it Eddie Pennock?
Eddie Pennock put his wide.
Because he was my manager at Forest Green, and I used to fucking pillock him about it. Yeah. Anyway, if he ever worked me, I said, shut up your fucking shit.
They took four, they only scored one. Yeah, I saved two, and they put one wide.
I said, shut up your shit, man. You missed your fucking penalty at Wembley. I said, don't fucking start quinn for me.
Did you play much under him?
Yeah, every game. He didn't drop us.
He took it in good spirit. But yeah, and then it come, I said to Lino, if I save this, is that it? He went, yeah. I said, you sure? He went, yeah. Anyway, I saved it, and
that iconic celebration.
Yeah, pulled the face.
That should be on royalties.
I don't know where it comes from. I'd never pulled it before. I've never pulled
never
it
since. Fast either since, have you?
Megatonic
and,
kicked it.
Yeah, and then I waved the lads over, and I sort of had this like electricity running through my body, and I thought, I don't want it to end, so I sort of hopped off at advertising boards, and it couldn't went. Ran round track, fucking back over, ran round, big Andy Morrison got hold of it, and I was fucked, let me tell you. And the last thing I wanted was a 20-man pile-on. That's exactly what happened, and, you know, I couldn't get any air in my lungs, and I was, must have been hyperventilating under there, but it would just, looking back now, just brilliant memories, and just a great occasion. Every time I still do bits and bobs over at Man City, and every time I go over, that's all people want to talk to me at that day. They say, and everyone's got their own little stuff. Well, we left, and then we ran back in, and some people got in the car and went, didn't even turn the radio on, and got halfway up M6 before they realised what had happened. So everyone's got their own stories, and it was just things couldn't get any worse for us than they were, and that almost the first rung in the ladder to get back into the big time, if you like.
Do you have a good drink after it?
You'll be disappointed, Parky, because I didn't. I was absolutely bollocks.
What, tired?
Oh, I was fucked. I must admit, though, afterwards.
I was surprised you 2 laps of Wembley.
I just didn't know what day it were. I was just bollocks. I made up for it next week or two.
I can imagine.
So that night, I just went home, and I was just shagged, basically. And then day after, I went on a session, and it lasted a few days, and it took sort of all summer to come down, because it was just, and it never really sunk in for weeks and months, really. And I think it's only when you finish your career and sort of look back that you sort of and I was young at times, so you just think, this is sort of how it is.
Yeah. This is just normal football.
Yeah, but it weren't, because it was just sort of best time of my life, you know. And to end my first season like that was just brilliant.
It's a shame Brownie's not here, because he has said you were the drunkest man he's ever seen.
Yeah, I can vouch for that as well.
Yeah, I'd go along with that.
In Dublin?
Yeah, I'd had a few. That were a few years later than that. But yeah, I can honestly say, since that day, I've never had a pint of Guinness since.
Have you not?
It was just slipping down a little bit.
Did them 43 put you off it?
I give it a good one. Well, we'd been out. It was Christmas due at Chef Wednesday, and we'd been out. We flew straight to Dublin. You lot were out there with Preston, weren't you?
Yeah.
And we'd flown straight out. I'm rooming with Tommy Miller.
And Tommy likes a drink.
Tommy fucking hell, he can drink. Jesus.
Yeah.
So we've gone out, banging Guinness down like there's no tomorrow. I think I must have fell asleep in a nightclub or something. And then I sort of wakes up, cleaners kicking me out sort of thing. I'm sort of stumbling around the streets of Dublin. I was trying to bring myself together. Gets back into the hotel. There's these two Irish lads. I'm on my own. All lads are long gone. So managed to find my way back to the hotel. There's these two Irish lads trying to get a drink in the hotel. And barman saying, you've got to be a resident. Sorry, lads, I can't serve you. I thought, I'll help him out to you. So like, lads, I'll have a pint with you. So I said, 3 pints of Guinness to kick off with. So I've had a couple with these Irish lads. Before you know it, it's fucking light and it's, 9 o'clock at morning, whatever. So I've had a few more with them. They're a bit pissed now. I'm fucking double pissed. And then I think we had to meet at like 11 down in fancy dress. So it gets to, 10, half 10. Lads start sort of rolling down in the fancy dress. And they're fucking pissed.
Still in your gear from?
Still in my gear from night before. Looking kebab down one arm, all that sort of game, And banging Guinness down. And I remember saying to Chris Sedgwick, come down. I went, Sedge, have a look at that. Showed him the pint of Guinness. I went, have a good look at it, because you're not going to see it in a minute. I just went, bang, and dropped it straight down hatch. And for some reason, I just kept doing it. because it
started a routine.
Every person who came down, watch this.
Bang. And lads are like laughing. And then you're like in a bit of show off mood, aren't you? And I'm fucking, I don't know what planet it were anyway. And so I kept banging them down anyway. I eventually got up to my room, gets my fancy dress on, and we've gone to this pub.
What were you?
We had to buy each other gear, so I just got dressed up in like some old shitty gear that someone had bought from a charity shop.
Yeah.
And a bit like Parky is now. A bit like Parky, but a bit smarter. And so we end up going into, we're going to Old Dubliner.
Old Dubliner.
So we've met old Preston lads in Old Dubliner. So I've been told, because my memory's a little bit... So
this is probably 11:15 Sunday morning.
Right.
So we're in Old Dubliner, and like Seb just goes, yeah, Weaves, here's another one. And you know, he's like, I'm dragging you one.
Go show Weaves, you're getting
it. Weaves, show him your trick.
Weaves. Parky, come and have a look at Weaves. You know Weaves, don't
bring
you?
That Guinness with you. Yeah. Bring that Guinness with you.
So one of them. You had to change a barrel about 4 times. Man. So I kept doing it. Fuck, I don't know how I kept doing it. But he obviously just, no real fist of Guinness, is he? Right. Don't make your burp broke, does he? It just like slips down. And I kept doing it. And Darren Purser said to Sedge, I'm going to have to take him back to the hotel in a bit. And Sedge, no, he's all right. Leave him. He's all right. Leave him.
But up to his weight, his legs were obviously straight. And then his waist, from his waist, he was sort of at a probably a 45 degree angle, but backwards.
I would defy gravity at this point, I think.
He stood up like, and he's not dropping a drop of Guinness. Not a bit on the floor. So it must have got to what? Must have only been in the half an hour, hour.
So I remember Sedge said to me, he says, I can't remember this at this point, he says, you've walked round corners if you're going for a piss. And he said, suddenly, you've like some other cartoon where I've gone round corner, then I must have fell into, must have been serving food, I've fallen into knives and forks and all plates. Babel. Blokes come round kicking off, saying, you're going to have to take him home. He's all right, mate, he's all right, mate. We'll sort him out for you. So by this time, Darren Purser's getting a bit agitated with captain. And a little bit sensible, Percy, you know what I mean? Oh, lads, we know he's all right, Percy. Anyway, I'll always be grateful to Percy because he did eventually take me home. And it must have been about 1:30, 2:00.
I woke up
at 4:00 next morning when Tommy Miller were coming in front Sunday night. But I didn't know I'd been out on Sunday. So I'd only thought I'd been out one night. So Tommy's come in with his kebab.
You still thought you got a night out to go, didn't you?
So I'm like thinking, fucking hell, what time is it? It's going, fucking hell, we'd be flying. And I'm thinking, and I'd lost a day of my life. I looked at my phone, fucking hell, there's like 200 missed calls, texters. I'm thinking, fucking hell. I've not been in touch with our lass or anyone. We just had my little girl, we were only little, you know, she was a few months old. Well, I spoke to her at the airport going out Saturday night. Next thing, I'm phoning her Monday morning. She'd been ringing hospitals in Dublin. I'm like, oh, I'm all right, love. Just had a bit of a longer kip than I imagined.
And fucking fresh as a daisy, love.
Yeah, but fucking, and I've never had a pint of Guinness since. It sort of scared me because I got taste of it. And obviously, lads are egging me on and all. Like, you know what it's like when you're in mood Christmas and we just won an all on Saturday, so you're sort of buzzing. Yeah. We've got Monday off. Oh, lads are buzzing. Oh, Preston, lads are there.
12,000 calories as well. Yeah.
Don't worry about that, though, do you? No. He never did.
That's like, I still don't.
So, yes, yeah, so I never had a pint of Guinness after that. And I've been to Dublin a good few times.
It was one of the drunkest I've ever seen anybody.
That's drunk as I've ever been. And I've been drunk a few times, like proper. I don't know what happened, but it sort of scared me a bit, to be fair. So I sort of toned it down to idiot-like for the next couple of months after that. A bit of a quiet Christmas and then picked up in February.
Were there some drinkers in that city team?
In the city team, yeah. I mean, when I first now, a young lad, we'd go out like all-day session. We're good at races and things like that at Chester and... you know, Saturday nights, they'd be like, you know, Michael Brown were there, Jeff Whitley, myself, Lee. A lot of younger lads there coming through. So you'd go out quite a bit. But sort of, and it was all right then. It was just seen as sort of team spirit, like, you know. Yeah. And then I got a little bit older and we signed Steve Howie. Remember Steve Howie's played for Newcastle? Yeah. Good player, Steve. I played for England, Steve. Good player. And he was the first one who sort of went out in day, just on a normal Monday afternoon. Normally you might go out on a Tuesday a bit early if you had Wednesday off.
Yeah.
We didn't really matter with Steve. So I sort of, I was young, single, lived on my own. I had nobody to keep me in, you know what I mean? So I started going out a bit and Paul Dickoff had come and, you know, Ian Bishop, Tommy Wright, so, you know, some senior guys.
Start getting a gathering together.
Yeah. And that, you know, we'd signed Richard Dunby this time, who he was partial to a drink as well. And, you know, and it sort of, before you know it, you get into a bit of a routine here, but you're winning and it's good team spirit and all that.
Monday afternoon club.
Fucking hell. It started on it. It was Saturday night club to Wednesday night club. You know, I mean, like Jeff Whitley, for example, I've been out with Jeff on a Saturday night. He's coming in training Monday with same gear on. And you're thinking, fucking hell. I mean, Jeff ended up having a lot of problems with alcohol and drugs and everything. if you don't mind me saying, because he goes around doing talks about it all now to young players. But before you know it, a sort of little drink culture sort of got in there. And while ever you're winning, it's fine. It's classed as good team spirit. But ultimately, we got relegated from Premier League, and Joe sort of lost his job. And it came out in press about there was a drink culture at the club and all this. And
were you aware of it, George?
Yeah, and it probably got a little bit out of hand. And we got relegated. So then it gets, Joe loses his job. And it gets, like I said, 2 years before when we're winning, we got promoted the year before when we weren't expected to, and it was great team spirit, great bunch of lads, and that spirit carries you through and all that, to suddenly there's a drink culture, and Kevin Keegan come in and tried to sort it all out.
Did he come in with an iron fist because of
He obviously knew. I always felt when Kevin Keegan come, he wanted, like, you know, he was signing players like Nicholas and Elka. He didn't want people who, like myself and your Richard Dunn's knocking about, if you like, who maybe, we weren't a bad influence though, don't get me wrong, but we just, we'd been in a team that had come through having a good time with lads, and he then, Keegan started signing like a few foreign players, and they're not into that, and you know, a lot of French African lads and that, and it's just then the dressing room sort of split a little bit then. They become a little bit of a French side, and it's just how it is, and it just evolved like that. But certainly under Joe, we had some, you know, we had some good trips abroad and stuff and all that.
That you can elaborate on.
I remember, I think it were in, so year after Wembley, I think we must have got knocked out at FA Cup, and we had a 3 week, you know, in that, like, January, early February. So it's never a bad thing to get knocked out at third round at FA Cup, is it, John? Right, lads,
it took me fucking 13 games to get to third round.
And they fucking all right. And so we've gone to Lanzarote I think it was February, and we're doing really well in the league. So we've got there, and he's like, it's not a piss up, lads, it's a training camp. When really you're thinking, nah, it's a piss up. So we get there up first day. We flew really early on first day. Right, no one has a drink before 6 o'clock. No one. Meet you in bar, we'll have a meal together, I'll buy you all your first drink, but no one has a drink before 6 o'clock. So next minute, Ian Bishop's coming around, bit of a whip round. He's gone to the supermarket. It was about 10:30 at morning. He's walking round pool with a shopping trolley full of ale.
What? Literally with the trolley?
Yeah, with trolley. So he's walking round with a shopping trolley full of ale. Joe Roll walks round the corner. We're hiding in something, Kitman's room, like.
Courting with trolley?
Yeah. So Big Joe's gone, fucking hell, Bish. And Big Joe's just gone, you're timing whenever the best, Bish. Now, fuck off. So Bish he's fucking like scooting around Paul into Kitman's room. And we just spent all day at Kitman's room. So he turns up at 6 o'clock for this meal. End up being meant to have a drink. Fucking hell. Lads are fucking plastered out. They've got silly sombrero hats on. You know what it's like. And and then he's like that. Your first night. Right, lads. Everyone in for midnight. Training at morning, everyone in for midnight. Yeah, Gaffer, no problem, Gaffer. Fuck, I fucking wham your food down as quick as you can, don't you?
You didn't want to eat it, yeah.
You do that every meal time, don't you? But so bang, we straight at Dan, fucking Veronica's and all that in it, and fucking stay at fucking 3, 4, 5 o'clock. Lads coming in, fucking falling asleep in reception. Also, next morning we had to be on the coach at said 9 o'clock. Fucking just about made it. Our room in with Lee Crooks. We just made it onto the coach. And
Crooks is a good lad.
Crooks is a great lad. We used to have club sandwich eating competitions in the room on the way games.
Did you say what?
Club sandwich eating competitions.
What, so you could eat them all?
Yeah.
What record?
Fucking hell. I'd be part to see physio or something. From that, I'll just, I come back in and go, I've just had one. I'm like a bastard. Can I have a club sandwich, please? No chips, just a sandwich. We'd have club, like six club, night before the game.
Club seven.
You fucking put half a stone on that before the game.
Club sandwich eating competition.
But you know what it's like, you're young and daft, aren't you? You just, I'm not saying we thought it
were the
norm, but
yeah. We're playing for the club.
So next morning we gets on this coach, fucking hell, in a right pickle. Ian Bishop gets on for training. Big Joe must have been like, fucking hell. Ian Bishop got on in a dressing gown to go training. Like, fucking hell. Fucking gets on it, dressing gown. So we got like a 20-minute drive to this running track, and you know it's like your belly's going. You think, why didn't I just go to bed at 12 or whatever? And then we got on this running track, and we had to do something like we did a bit of a warm up, and like, yeah, fuck, you just think, right, half an hour, get through it, and then you're done, aren't you? Back on piss. So you just think, get through it. So we started off on this, and do you remember Tony Grant? midfielder, played at Everton, come to City.
Did he end up Norwich manager?
No, that was Peter Grant.
Peter Grant.
That really must have been his uncle Peter. But now, so Tony Grant, great lad, midfielder, good player, really technical player, but he'd been out, I think, later than us all. So he starts off on this first lap and Grant, he looked like Rodney Trotter. And we're running around this track and there's a little like shed where they keep all the equipment side of this running track. So after halfway out first lap, Grant is opting shed. We've done another 7.5 laps and Grant is dropped onto the back of groove. Big Joe ends on finish line. Well done, lads. Well done.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
Grant has sort of chugged a bit of water on himself, giving it all out, and Big Joe never none the wiser. But again, next night, no drinking before 6, and this was sort of common theme every night, so we're out every night, coming in at all, so managed to sort of, you get to end at week, you're like, it's like a 5-day stag do, yeah. A little bit of training,
so a
bit of inconvenience in the middle, but you sort of get through it, don't you? And then at last night, he's giving, you've been brilliant this week, lads, absolutely fantastic. Any bother acting on you, you can go out to that, stay out till what time you want. I didn't fucking bother going out, I didn't bed at 10 o'clock, bollocks.
You didn't want it, did you, man?
Brilliant. And I remember situation. We come back on something like Wednesday and we played Notts Forest away on Saturday and we won 3-1 away at Forest, which was a tough place to go at that time. And it was just brilliant, you know, because the net worse are going on a mid-season trip, coming back and getting beat. Yeah. And it's like, you know, manager's then got to see chairman, and, oh, what have they been doing in Lanzarote and all this. So yeah, it was great. And obviously we went up that season.
So it's a team building exercise then,
absolutely.
Isn't it?
Yeah. And but yeah, it was fantastic and, you know, a great trip we had then. And we went on to, that was February, I think, we went on to promotion end of the season, so it was fantastic.
What were Stuart Pearce like when he came in?
Well, he first came as a player.
Yeah.
Kevin Keegan, first signing he made, Stuart Pearce. So it was like, sort of, I'll never forget, first time I ever played with Pearce, we played in a pre-season friendly at Halifax. And I was going to say I caught across them, but I wanted them. Had ball in my hands. And I've rolled it out of the Pearce left back slot. And I've put it slightly behind him. I'm talking half a yard. He's turned round and give me biggest roast. Like, hey, you fucking, make sure you put it in front of me next time. And he'd give me that growl that he gives. And I'm thinking, fucking hell. I never rolled it behind him again, let me tell you. But he was good. So he came as a player and he played 40 games or something that's year. There's a 39, 40-year-old. Yeah, yeah. And his legs have gone a little bit, but it was great to sort of play the same team. Look, and he didn't go out to warm up. He'd sort of stand in there in the dressing room, like fucking heading a few against wall, growling at himself in mirror and all that. And then he'd get it tunnel, wouldn't look at anyone, he'd be fucking like right on it. And it was great to sort of play with someone who I'd grew up watching play for England and all that. But I never forget, last game of the season, playing Portsmouth at home, we're 4-0 up. It's 90th minute, we get a penalty, Stuart Pearce is on 99 career goals. So he's taking penalty, Dave Besant's in goal for Portsmouth, and Dave Besant says to Pearce, I'm going to stand still. So put it where you want, I'm not going to die. He's fucking gone for stand Shani Pearce and put it high and wide. So he ended up getting stuck on 99 career goals when goalkeeper weren't going to fucking dive. So, and then... you think
fair play from Dave Besson, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Let him get his under.
But he's gone for a bit of glory, and he's gone for top corner. And then he became a coach for a few years. And I sort of, he used to live up there because he was based down in Wiltshire. Had some big like farm in Wiltshire, so he was sort of based up there in a hotel, little apartment on his own. I lived on my own, so he'd sometimes said, "Do you want to come to a concert?" Like, so I'd, yeah, all right. So I remember going to watch Status Quo with him because he was a bit of a rocker, Pearce. So I and.
So I went to watch Status Quo with him and Oasis and one or two others. And
Did he like a drink?
Not really, no. I think he did in his younger days, but not really. I think he just sort of... No, he didn't.
Take it or leave it.
Yeah, and he left it most of the time. When he was, I think he did in his younger days, but he didn't with us. And I went to dog racing with him a few times. And then I remember going to this little festival with a couple of my pals and Stranglers Run. And I've sort of wandered down towards near Mosh Pier at Lancashire Cricket Ground. And someone went, "Here's Piercy." And I've looked round and he's in Mosh Pit like fucking growling, like fucking heads rocking. He's on his own. I'm thinking, fucking so I've like, and I've gone, "You're all right, Stu?" He's gone, "All right, Sam." And he's like growling again, carrying on in Mosh Pit. And Stranglers were his favourite band. And I said, "Oh, have you seen them before?" He went, "It's my 77th time." And he's looking like that. And I'm my mates are thinking, fucking what a boy. You know, he's fucking England legend. He's there growling at front of Mosh Pit. And it was 77th time watching Stranglers. But he was mates with them all. And
gig buddies then with him?
Yeah, I went to a few with him, not loads. And we used to go to Dogs on a Tuesday night sometimes at Speedway.
Yeah.
Just for something to do, because I was like, you know, young single lad, so I didn't have any ties. I could do what I wanted when I wanted. And Piercy up here on his own. I'm not saying we were like best buddies, we weren't, but yeah. We went
out on a Tuesday. Did you ever drink at the Dogs?
No, not really.
No?
No. And I have a couple at a concert or whatever, but that was sort of... It weren't that sort of guy, Piercy. Yeah. But he's a great fella. And then he became manager. So Kevin Keegan got sacked. He'd been there 4.5 years, Keegan, I think. And he was the longest manager I'd ever... But I'd been injured most of the time under him. We sort of prime years and sort of took away. I didn't play for like 3 years. I played one game in 3 years, yeah. I think. So it sort of altered me sort of peak years, sort of like 23 to 26, 27... I barely played, and that was most of the time when Kevin Keegan were there. And I got fit under Stuart Pearce, and you know, I played, and he'd signed Andreas Isaacson, Swedish international. And I'm thinking, fucking hell, I just signed $2.5 million. We've got David James at the club, Joe Hart, we just signed, so I'm thinking, fucking hell, all right, here I am. I'm sort of like third, fourth choice. So this Isaacson signs one particular day, Stuart Pearce manager, Isaacson. I walked in from training, there's this big fucker in. Boy, I think he was that fucking. And then I thought, it's fucking that Isaacson, Swedish goalie. I thought, this is all we fucking need, isn't it? Look, David James, who's like number one, and if you're at a club with David James, he plays and that's it, because he were that good, and you know, that's just how it were with JMO. And then you got Joe Hart and Kasper Schmeichel sort of on your coattails, and we just signed this other lad, so I'm thinking, it's fucking marvellous, this, isn't it? And anyway, next day, David James got sold to Portsmouth. Joe Hart was sort of up and coming, so he weren't really a massive threat to me at that time. So I'm thinking, well, I'll go into season's number two. I can sort of live with that from where I'd been.
Yeah.
Anyway, season day before the season started, Andreas did something to his ankle or his calf or something. And anyway, I played next day.
Were he any good, that? Were he any good at goalkeeping?
Ah, he was fucking better than me. But he had about 100, ended up with about 125 caps for Sweden. Which were 125 more than I got. but yeah, so I played. And then, to be fair, I started off season all right, and Piercy left me in. And to be fair to him, he changed it in about February. I had a little dip in form. Well, a big dip, really, but we'll call it a little dip. And so I'll always be grateful for Piercy for sort of for sticking by me, because he were only out for a few weeks, Andreas, and he come back fit, and he left him on bench, to be fair, and Piercy, you know, were great. And
See, worth going to them fucking concerts with you, weren't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
You listen to get that fucking Status Quo one. You listen to some shit music, but it was fucking worth it in the long run.
Wish I'd have gone to a few more now. Wish I'd have gone to them 77 Stranglers ones with him.
Did you train much with Pete Schmeichel?
Yeah, I was injured. Fucking Pete didn't fucking train much, let me tell you. But great fella. Absolute cracking fella. The sort of presence of him and the awe around him. And I mean, he come, he was bloody 39, bless him. They just used to sort of wheel him out on a Saturday. And Pete, he was just a colossus, Pete. I'm so glad I got opportunity to train with him and sort of get to know him and that. He was a great fella. And he retired at the end of the season. He'd been great for us. And then David Seaman come to you after that. And
fucking
he,
hell, you were saying, yeah. Where are you wheeling him in from? Fucking old people's up.
Some shadows, man.
Fucking hell. Anyway, Dave come.
Who were best?
They were different. You know, Dave were like.
Swerve that one,
hadn't he? Yeah. I remember his first game, Seaman, he's in tunnel, and referee said to him.
Is this when he's got the ponytail back?
Yeah. Oh, so he's like, chewing gum, twiddling ponytail. Yeah. Referee said, when goal is in tunnel, he always asks,
ref always says, do you want to touch at ball to have a little feel for your gloves and that. He said to Dave, he said, do you want to touch? Dave, he's going, no. He won't want to touch though. He might be seeing it more than me.
You know, in that
big Yorkshire voice he had and that big
like a Santa Claus laugh, weren't it?
And yeah, but he was brilliant, Dave. He just a cracking fella. Unfortunately, he'd sort of probably just packed, well, a lot, but he was 39, 40 at the time. He ended up finishing with a shoulder injury at sort of Christmas. But again, so to play away, so it went from Schmeichel to Seaman, then we signed David James.
Yeah.
So it was like to work with sort of them three, who were all totally different, but yet...
What was JMO like?
I used to get on great with JMO. Yeah. Not great, we weren't like bosom buddies, but no, I liked JMO. No, I could sort of handle him. Not handle him, because he fucking did what he wanted and he just sort of went along with it, because he was... But we had a Dutch guy called Ronald Vatterhuis, who later, probably more famous playing at Rangers, Dutch goalie. And me and him would be stood out there with Tim Flowers, goalie coach, and then JMO would come walking out with his Lucozade bottle full of coffee. Big fucking Lucozade water bottle full of coffee. And Ronald had this really deep accent, this Dutch accent. He'd go, Weaves, the king is coming, so when he comes, we have to talk about what he wants to talk about. So we used to call this guy Ronald, Ronnie from Donny. this Donny, what is it? So we said, place called Doncaster, but we call it Donny. So Ronnie from Donny is going, I'm thinking this Donny is a bit of a shithole. You know what you're thinking? Well, you're probably not far off, pal. And he was a great one, but he couldn't handle JMO. Because like, oh, we've got to talk about what he wants to talk about.
Too serious.
Yeah, but I just fucking, if JMO wanted to talk about something, okay, I couldn't give a fuck. I just get on with everyone, me, you know what I mean? But
right about him used to sleep in his car and stuff like that.
I think he had like that sleep problem where he wakes up. I heard a story that Liverpool signed a player called Torben Picnic, and a fullback, I think, and he were rooming with JMO. So his first away trip, he's a walking at 4 o'clock in the morning with JMO on the top of him, strangling him. I mean, JMO is a big, imposing figure, a big man. You wouldn't want to clop a left hander off him.
Rather than fucking choking me though, yeah, than fucking throwing it up me.
Like, let me tell you though, he'll pack in 12 dance loggies. You won't want it behind here for a pencil. Fucking hell.
Just choke me, don't fucking
bend me over.
You're gonna choke me,
choke your hands. Fucking hell. God knows what he fed it on me. Like a fucking football site. I won't get it shower next to JMO. He had everything that I didn't. You know what I mean? He just had muscles coming out. He had, as you can imagine, he had the lot, like. And he was so talented. Soup. If you could design a goalie, it would be JMO. It was, some days they just could not get the ball past him. So again,
he could drop a ballot though, couldn't he?
We all can, can't we?
Well,
I drop fucking more than most, but he could, yeah. So you'd sort of, you know, mentally he probably could have been better. He'll probably admit that himself. But as an actual talent, I don't think there's been a better one myself. But it was great at City for 2 years. Go on, sorry.
David James better than Schmeichel? If you can imagine Schmeichel in his pomp,
I'd say no, because for me Schmeichel was changed the face of goalkeeping forever. But David James in his pomp was just, when he had certain spells at Liverpool, it was brilliant. 2.5 years he had at City, it was brilliant. He was England's number one. And then he went to Portsmouth, and he did great at Portsmouth for a couple of years.
You have a problem with computer games?
JMO, he was one of them, yeah.
Yeah, he was fucking a bit crap at FIFA.
I was saying to him, like, Stad, you're on, I said, you're all right. He went, oh, I was up until 4 this morning. So what are you doing? He's like, logging me gloves. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, oh, gloves, I've got to log them and put them in my little pigeonholes and all that sort of thing. So I think he collected stuff and he was into art, and he'd think nothing of sort of staying up all night on computer games and all that sort of stuff. But he's a good lad, JMO. I sort of got on with him, and if I ever bump into him now, not very often to be fair, it's always sort of good to see him. But yeah, so I went and had a string of three fantastic goalkeepers to sort of to learn from, and there were Joe Hart and Kasper Schmeichel sort of bubbling under as well at the time. So them five goalkeepers I worked with there were sort of five at sort of best about.
Did you see promise in Kasper Schmeichel? Like, did you see him?
No. I did. No, I didn't. You know, sometimes you don't.
It's a big shadow, isn't it? I suppose, to follow him.
And he always, like, he lived in his dad's shadow, which you're going to know. His dad's one of the greatest goalkeepers of all time. And Kasper, if I be honest with you, I thought Kasper would be like a championship goalie. Yeah. But what he did, he worked his bollocks off and he just got better and better. He dropped down, he went to Notts County, ended up at Leeds.
Left Bury for a bit.
Yeah, he went loan to Bury, loan to Falkirk, Coventry, loads of places. He wanted to play football and he ended up going to Leicester and he just got better and better. And so pleased with him because a great lad, but everything he's got has been down to hard work. Yeah. And it, you know, he's turned into one of the best keepers in Premier League. It's Danish number one. He's won Premier League. So, you know, you could see Joe, and if you'd have said to me, is Joe Hart going to have 70 odd England caps? I don't think you can say that when someone's 18, 19.
Yeah.
But you can see they're going to have, you never know how far they're going to go. But, you know, Joe was very, very talented, and Casper as well. But Casper's work ethic was, he used to get angry with himself, and he demanded sort of stuff we should have got from his dad, you know.
Yeah. What about Joey Barton? Did you get on with Joey?
I got on with Joey, yeah.
Yeah. Joey, did you see him going in management?
Probably seen him going into politics more than one bit, but yeah, Joey, a great lad, Joey. Got a lot of time with Joey. Always got on great with Joey. Really did. He just did stupid stuff.
Were you there with on the cigar?
I was stood next to him.
Were you?
Yeah. I fucking lit it for him. I pulled zipper. I did trick with zipper here, pal. I was dressed as Ali G. Joey was dressed as John Lennon, I think. I was dressed as Ali G, so I got like fucking stupid hat on, goggles, fucking gold shell suit with all fucking jewellery and all that shit. Like. And a young kid called Jamie Tandy, who was a youth team player, he was a really good kid. He never went on to do anything, I don't think, went to play like local non-league sort of stuff. And he, early on in the night, Joey had a lighter and tried to set fire. Tandy would come as Officer and a Gentleman, Richard Gere. Yeah. Joey tried to set fire to the back of tail of his jacket sort of thing. So anyway, Tandy's like, oh, fuck off, Joey, whatever. 4 or 5 hours had passed and about 12 pints. And Tandy's thought, I'll get him back here. So Tandy's trying to set Joey's alight. And Joey had a cigar on. So as Joey's turned round, seeing what Tandy's doing, he's just gone bosh, cigar straight in his eye. You can even hear, tss. You know, you're like, fucking hell. Everyone's like, fucking hell. And it's like, Tandy's
a bit too far, Joey. Yeah. Too far.
But you sort of, I'm thinking, fucking Ada. And like, it's a bit of a commotion. Lads are fucking getting off. Joey Tandy's wanting to chill. And Tandy's sort of thinking, this could be serious, this. I think he lost his sight for fucking a little bit. I don't know. He might have sort of tried to make a bit more out of it. And then obviously, the big sort of debacle come after it all went in sort of papers. And I think afterwards. But again, that was typical Joey. Like, Joey would be fine and just do something daft.
Yeah.
And I remember him coming into training once with a fucking, this gun. Like a
gun?
Like, it weren't a pellet, it was like a fucking rifle thing. So he walks into the dressing room, and he's, you're thinking, oh, for fuck's sake, if you want anyone to have a rifle, it ain't him. So he fired it at someone's locker, and I think, fucking had enough of you. So I fucked off out. Then we're dicking about with it outside, and then Ben Thatcher, fucking hell, what a boy, I'll come on to him in a minute. And we could have an old programme on him. And Ben Thatcher's driving out at training ground, he's got his shades on. And he's just his arm resting on windows, he's driving out, and fucking Joey Barton's about 30 yards away, he's gone bosh, shot at him, and just underneath the door handle, so his arm's resting on that sill where the window would be, window down, it's pierced first skin at car, and fuck, if it had been 12 inch higher, it'd have gone his eye or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And fucking that, just kicking off. And but that was just Joey, just did sort of daft stuff.
So he shot at one of his teammates?
Shot at one of his teammates, I think I've seen him do well. I mean, I was here when he beat Usman Darbo up. You remember that one?
Yeah.
I thought he fucking killed him.
Who's Usman Darbo?
Usman, we signed him from Lazio. And big signing, French international. And then a bit of pushing and shoving in training. And it kicked off. And then Joey just went bosh. And Usman's on the floor.
He's still going?
Oh, and lads eventually dragged him off. I mean, you've seen plenty of scuffles in training, haven't you? But this one, it weren't really a scuffle. It was just bang, 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 see you later. And it just happened so quick. And I never forget, a family had won a competition to come and watch us train. And they stood about 10 yards, just Joey's knocking, knocking fucking Usman Darbo's head off. And you're thinking, fuck. Anyway, PSC were manager, he sent Joey home, and he never played at the club again. It was towards end of season. So they suspended him, then he went for Newcastle. Mm-hmm. But that's not Joey that I know. Like, Joey was a good lad. One thing that Joey did was trained his bollocks off. He zapped everything out of his career. You know, he played for England when there's a lot more talented players not played for England. But he zapped everything out. And he was a good lad, worked hard. He's very opinionated, got a short fuse. And
a decent fucking right up bit, to answer it.
And loved the cigar one particular night. But he weren't a drinker or nothing, Joey.
Could he rub people up wrong way? Did you either like him or you?
Yeah, a little bit. And I think as he got older, like, he's an intelligent kid, obviously, you know.
just a scouser, just a good lad.
Yeah.
And you know, I got on great with Joey, and he just, like I say, he's a good lad, just did daft stuff.
Or daft of the most.
Well, so there's daft stuff and there's fucking daft stuff. I mean, shooting at one of your teammates.
Well,
I think that's quite
drive by.
Yeah, that's a bit more than daft.
I've got to ask, when Stuart Pearce put David James up front, I've got to ask him that. Were it pre-meted? Did you know what? But they had the shit ready though.
Yeah. The first thing I knew about it, so we're playing Middlesbrough. Playing Middlesbrough, last game of the season. We're drawing 1-1. We needed to win to finish in Europe. If we didn't, Middlesbrough went into Europe. So if Middlesbrough drew, they went in. If we won, we went. So we had to win. So the draw's good for Middlesbrough. 10 minutes left. Scorching hot day. Last game of the season. Middlesbrough, Etihad. Tim Flowers, goalie coach, turned around and went, "Weaves, get warmed up." This is about 80 minutes. I went, "What? You didn't fucking get warmed up?" I'm like, "What are you fucking on about?" I'd not been long back from injury. I'm thinking, he can't be putting me on five, saying, "Well done for getting back," sort of thing. Do you know what I mean?
Hey, give him a little sweet there.
Yeah,
give
him 5 minutes. It worked hard, Nick. It's not end of season dead rubber sort of thing. It was fucking, you know. So then Pierce turns around, "Weaves, get ready, going on." I'm like, "What the fuck? So I'm fucking doing the tie ups." I'm thinking, fuck. Next minute, I see the kit man, Les Chapman. Great fella, by the way, Chappy. He pulls out of his little jacket, outfield shirt with James number one on it. So I'm sat next to John Mack, and bearing in mind we'd paid $5 million for Mack.
I was
going
to say.
And he's going, "Oh, this is fucking great, isn't it?" Fucking, I know what's happening fucking here. Yeah. So it started to sort of twig then. And you think, so only three people who knew about it were Piercy, David James, and Kitman. No one else knew about it. So I'm getting warmed up. I'm thinking, I just had about 6 Jaffa cakes. Like, you know what I mean? Still got some chocolate in
wine gum.
Yeah, you know what it's like on bench. Well, you'll know more than me probably.
I used to play.
So yeah, so next minute I've gone over to fourth official. He's held it up. I think he was number 6, Claudio Arena. So Claudio's like, I'm there. Claudio's like, "What, he's replacing me?" Do you know what I mean? It's like,
we're going to play with two keepers.
Basically, JMO's sprinted over with Claudio's wandering over like scratching his head. John Macken's fucking probably fucked off into the dressing room. And I won't blame him. And so yeah, JMO's come on, whipped his shirt off, whipped his outfield shirt on, James number one on back. He's gone up front, Claudio's gone sat on bench, I've gone in goal. And it was just like, I'm thinking, I was buzzing because it was my first appearance for a while because I've been injured. So, you know, I was just buzzing to be on pitch, couldn't believe it, like, you know. And game goes on. It weren't like with the last minute, it's about 8-9 minutes to go plus injury time.
Yeah.
Anyway, he caused fucking havoc. He was fucking hopeless, wasn't he? But he's like, he's bouncing off
everywhere.
But what it did, it just caused a bit of panic.
Yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't want to be marking big fucking JMO, so he ended up getting us a corner and it went, oh, and a fucking... Anyway, we end up getting a penalty in about 94th minute. So, gets penalty, 94th minute, crowds are going fucking wild. Obviously, it's like a bit of a strange atmosphere. Which it's a bit of a jokey sort of thing, but it works. It
almost testimonial,
yeah,
kind of.
Yeah, that's what it sort of felt like. So Robbie Fowler steps up to take penalty. You'd put your fucking house on Robbie, wouldn't you? It was, you know, great at penalties. Took him in, obviously, massive. I just don't think he fancied Thursday nights in UEFA Cup next year. Do you know what I mean?
Fuck that. Fuck.
Thursday night away in fucking Czech Republic. Yeah. So anyway, Mark Schwarzer ended up saving it.
Yeah.
And that was that. And it was my girlfriend. It was her first ever game she'd ever been to. And she says to me after, "Does that happen all the time?" Like, "It'll never happen as long as you live ever again." And she's like, "Oh, right." And she just thought, like, "Well, no, you would know, would you?" So we fucking unbelievable. It could have been us, like, you know, but obviously Robbie didn't fancy Thursday nights, did he? I think it would be double corner on Thursday.
It's good soap night, Thursdays.
Were John Macken, were he pissed off about it?
A lot pissed off,
fucking,
I think.
What? Yeah. What are he pissed off about? He's put a goalkeeper up front instead of in your sleeve. Of course he was pissed off about it.
But it would end at season, so it weren't like we're in training next day. Well, that was it. See you later, lads. Have a good summer sort of thing.
What he pissed off about it? No.
Well, to the point that he wants... I'm fucking off.
Oh, that's a fuck off moment. Yeah. That
if
you're putting a goalkeeper up front instead of you, and you're a striker sat on bench, that's I'm fucking off.
Would you
moment.
Be off?
Would I be off? I want to sit fucking end at game.
He'd have been having his fucking pizza in the dressing room anyway.
I'd have been up the tunnel. I'd have been chained before that fucking game finished. I'm off.
That's it, we're done. Because for the very first time, we're going to have to do two parts. There was just too much good stuff from Mr. Weaver. He had too much to say, and it wouldn't be fair to try and compress it all into an hour. There was just too much good stuff. So we're going to have two 50-minute parters. So Nicky Weaver part two coming very, very soon. Keep an eye out on the Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and we'll say when it's coming out, which will be shortly. Parky's got a book out. It's out now, Feed the Beast. If you haven't heard, if you've just got back from the moon, that's in Amazon and all the bookshops and all that. It's very good. I've read it, and I'm a very well-read man, I'll tell you. What else is there? Oh, the live show. Live show, yes. Nearly forgot. That's coming up very soon. October the 11th, Bramall Lane. Chris Morgan, the very first guest. There's going to be at least one other guest on there. And there's going to be all kinds of other stuff going on. It's not just a podcast. But it's all for charity. It's going to be really good now. We're going to be giving shirts away. There's going to be all kinds of stuff going on. So keep an eye out on the social for more information on that. And as always, thanks for listening. And congratulations to Mr. Brown and the arrival of the new Wee Ben. We'll be back very soon with Nicky Weaver Part 2. See you later.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.